and we have to really escalate the noise we make so that we'll be heard.
Welcome to Gay USA. I'm Andy Hum.
And I'm Kathy Marino Thomas.
Welcome, Kathy Marino Thomas. Good to see you again.
Thank you, Andy.
Glad that you're going to be a regular here, co-host of Gay USA, you and Jay Walker. By the way, next week, Kate Barnhart, who works in youth services.
How great.
Is going to be co-hosting with me.
That's really nice.
But what a week of news. We're going to give you the LGBTQ angles on Tuesday's elections, including the end of anti-LGBTQ control of the Orlando School Board.
How yay, how lovely. Let's do some headlines, Andy.
Yeah, next.
I'm sorry. It's my turn. That's why. Rehoboth Beach elects an out lesbian mayor, and Rutherford County, Tennessee, gets its first out gay official.
Those are breakthroughs. This week, Trump was certified as a sexual assaulter by the U.S. Supreme Court.
J.D. Vance joins the Trump MAGA pile on transgender people.
Such a bully. A transgender CIA officer, you've probably seen this on the news, who served Vice President Pence, was purged in the second Trump administration.
Outgay principal of the year in Wisconsin sues over attacks on him by anti-LGBTQ board.
Bisexual former senator, cops to the affair she had with a married bodyguard while she was in office.
In Colorado, a gay couple is shot and one left in critical condition in anti-gay anti-gay road rage attack.
That was awful. Awful incident.
Yeah, awful.
We have a lot of people to mourn this week. A leading New Orleans gay activist, a legendary lesbian voice coach, a groundbreaking Black gay pastors in D.C. and Cincinnati, and the doctor who linked throat cancers to HPV.
That's an interesting story. A lesbian couple wins the right to marry in Bolivia, but the ruling just applies to them. You know I love this story.
And trans director Lily Wachowski of Matrix fame cannot get funding for the trans-themed production that she's doing right now. But we start with the elections. You know, there wasn't some like major, you know, LGBTQ victory last night other than people who supported us. And one of them was Florida State Representative Angie Nixon, who was also a union organizer. She's now the Democratic nominee for the U.S. Senate in Florida. And she spoke about LGBTQ issues. This is from the campaign.
I'm Sander.
And I'm Angie Nixon.
And we say gay!
My sister is transgender, and we've had to avoid certain locations in Florida because of the dangerous anti-trans bathroom bans. I've also had friends who tell me they will not travel to the state of Florida because of the anti-trans laws. If you are elected to the Senate, what changes for trans Floridians?
So number one, I got the receipts. Not only am I an ally, but I'm a willful accomplice. And I've been filing the Freedom to Learn Act here in the state of Florida, which would have allowed the trans community to be able to use whatever pronouns that they want to use, or people in general. I'm going to be very vocal about supporting trans rights. Everyone should have the opportunity to be healthy, to be prosperous, to be safe. My son is gay, and I love members of the LGBTQ community. Gay children are four times more likely to attempt to commit suicide than anyone else. So we need to make sure that we are supporting them. We need to make sure that we have mental health services for them. And we need to make sure that we are making them feel comfortable in their environment, which is why I don't believe we should allow teachers to out their students to their parents. It's just not good for them. And so these are the types of policies that I would put forth to make sure that folks feel safe and just welcome in our country and in our state.
Angie Nixon has the LGBTQ plus community back. We need to vote for Angie Nixon.
Vote now. Anything can happen on election day. Let's do it right now while you can.
Let's do it.
Let's go. Mm-hmm. Period.
Period.
Well, anything did happen on election day. She was outspent 16-1 by Alex Vindman.
Amazing.
And people power beats money almost every time.
Let's make sure that our audience knows that he was a key witness in Trump's first impeachment inquiry. I really thought he was going to take it for that reason alone.
Well, I mean, he seemed like a good guy. I mean, you know, but again, didn't impress the voters. People really want big change.
Yeah.
She's a Democratic socialist. Now, I mean, I hear people saying things like, well, she can't win now. They say, look at the votes. The votes, many more Republican votes, not many more, but more Republican votes than Democratic votes. But independents are going to swing this election.
That's what I was going to say. And time and time again, we're seeing these Democratic socialists pull the election out in their favor. It's kind of amazing. People who are outspent are winning, which is great.
They're pushing the corporate Democrats off the scene. And then there's the governor's race. This guy, Byron Donald, who's, you know, to the right of DeSantis, I think, even. He's the Republican.
Oh, yeah, a Black Trump ally. He enters the election with huge advantages in fundraising. But David Jolly is an interesting guy because he was a Republican.
Democratic nominee.
Yeah, he's the Democratic nominee, and now he's a Democrat. So we may see some of those independents move to him because he does have some of their values. Guy in Florida. It's interesting.
And Byron Donald is really making his opposition to the humanity of trans people the centerpiece of his campaign. And didn't he see what happened in Virginia and New Jersey? I mean, maybe that will be more successful in Florida, but it didn't succeed there in Virginia and New Jersey. And then, you know, our viewer Rich down there in Orlando sent me this. There was a huge win over the far right Moms for Liberty.
That was wonderful.
Orange County, Florida, which Orlando is the center of. And, you know, he said our community voted no to hate.
Angie Gallo won. That was great.
They won the board. They won the presidency. There's one race still up in the air, but they're going to be in control. And, you know, this woman who was ousted as the head of the board. Well, I'm disappointed, but I'm thankful for the time God has allowed me to be on the school board to speak truth and be a light. Well, you're out.
Pack your stuff. Pack your stuff. Get out of here. Yeah. And you know, because of that win, it gives me a lot of hope for Angie Nixon pulling out in the general election.
Well,
put those two things together.
I was going to say we shall see. But, I mean, she's the kind of candidate where they knock on doors. Out, just like Mom Donnie in New York and others, they are out there. They're not depending on big money.
Yeah.
All right. There's some other things we didn't know about last week. In Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, they elected the first out LGBTQ mayor, Susan Stewart. She got 60% of the vote. She's not only the first gay mayor, but the first woman elected in decades.
In decades. Again, showing that people are ready for a big change. They're ready to try something different. And this gives me a lot of hope. I love it.
Well, her quote is, I went knocking on all these doors for a second summer in a row because I ran for last year for commissioner. Every commissioner should have to do it because it's such an enlightening experience to sit down and hear people. Imagine that.
And that's what's winning elections this time around. And it gives me a lot of hope, Andy, a lot of hope.
And how about this kid? And I call him a kid, but he's 22 years old. He's an adult.
He's a kid.
Stop it. Come on. I'm 7 years old. I mean, you're a kid to me,
Anyway, he made history in Tennessee, and Tennessee seems to be back and forth. They can't make up their minds which way they want to go. But this was a great win. 22 years old, a borough bagel worker, won a seat in the Rutherford County Commission, becoming the youngest commissioner ever elected in the county, first openly gay elected official. Love it.
Now, this is the same county that fired a librarian over her stocking of LGBTQ-themed books. And again, he knocked on 1,500 doors. And, he proved that you don't need to be a career politician to make a difference. Okay. And then a disappointment and sort of an outrage. Go back to Florida in Miami-Dade. There was a U.S. House race there, primary. And one of the leading candidates was out gay state senator Chevron Jones.
Yeah.
Of him, and he lost by 2 points. And there were dirty tricks in this campaign. We don't know who did it. A text message falsely stating that Jones is living with HIV. This has been condemned, but it's, you know, and the text would say, claimed it was paid for by Equality Florida, which of course it wasn't. And they're trying to find out who did it and so on. But he lost by 2 points. Now, those being HIV, you know, shouldn't be. There are many out HIV people in politics. Senator Jones happens not to be one of them. But I mean, this was a dirty trick.
It was a dirty trick. And to say Equality Florida did it is a double whammy. First of all, I'd like to think that we have a little more honor than to call someone HIV positive when they're not. What would be the premise for Equality Florida to do that?
Of course they wouldn't.
What would they gain?
Of course they wouldn't.
Right.
All right. Let's stay on some more positive stories. A real breakthrough in Idaho, where they have this horrible anti-trans law. So activists have created the Idaho Inclusive Bathroom Map, a community resource developed by Trans Affirm to help transgender, non-binary, intersex, and gender diverse people find safe places to go to bathrooms across the state. It's an outrage that this has to be done.
It is an outrage. That's what I was going to say, Andy. I'm thrilled that the community put this together. It's certainly helpful in these horrible times. However, imagine that we need a bathroom map.
What was the map developed by Black people back in the 50s and 60s? Was it called the Green Book?
The Green Book, yeah.
Go ahead.
Places to go, people, places to stay over, places to eat, all of that in the Green Book. Yeah.
Look, as I said, I'm 72 years old. When I started at the University of Virginia, I was on the bowling team, and there was the team coming in from one of the Black historical colleges was having trouble finding a place to stay in Charlottesville. This is 1972.
Yeah, I think you should show us all a picture of you bowling then, Andy. Maybe in the next episode of Gay USA, we can see.
Well, hold on a second.
You see, folks, all you got to do is prompt him just a little bit.
I don't have a bowling picture, but I have this. This is me playing golf in 1975. How's that?
Wow, that's really great. Okay, I'll go with that. That's amazing.
That's at Shinnecock Hills where they play the Open now. That's amazing. I don't play anymore. Anyway, all right.
Back to the bathroom, Bill. It's very nice that they have this map. I think it's necessary. I hope the community uses it and contributes to it and keeps it alive.
Kansas, a report from Professor Arthur Leonard that a state trial judge has issued a preliminary injunction against enforcement of the state's ban on medical transition treatment for minors based on his reading of the state constitution. You're not giving these people due process. You're just banning it. So, of course, you know, the horrible attorney general down there, Kobach, will appeal, but we'll see what the appellate court says.
But you know what? The courts are really the heroes for these bans. They are overturning them frequently. And I love to see that. In this time, I think the courts are our hope.
But we've gotten very anti-trans decisions from the U.S. Supreme Court. But we got a good one relative to E. Jean Carroll this week.
Oh, my God. My favorite story of the week.
Go ahead. What happened?
Because he keeps trying. He keeps trying to do it. That orange thing in the White House.
You don't like saying his name.
No, I don't like saying his name. And this is my favorite photo to date of the two of them. I love it. It's beautiful. Let's hear the statement from Robbie Kaplan. We are pleased that the United States Supreme Court has declined again to hear this case. As a result, the jury's unanimous verdict that he sexually assaulted and then defamed E. Jean Carroll is now final and cannot be changed in any court.
Cannot be challenged in court. And,
challenged. That's what I meant. Sorry. Challenged.
This is for the $5
million. That's the $5
million. The original sexual. He is now, the Supreme Court has said Donald Trump sexually assaulted this woman.
That's right.
And now, of course, he keeps saying terrible things about her. So he got sued. And I think he now owes her $83
million. $83 million. Pay up.
Well, let's see where that goes.
He's going to try to pay up with our tax dollars, I guarantee.
By the way, this week, Trump's lawsuit against Harvard, charging them with anti-Semitism, as if he cared,
right,
was dismissed by federal judge Richard Stearns, who's a Bill Clinton appointee, who said, look, the incidents you're citing in this case are too isolated and episodic to show that Harvard was breaking the law. Now, of course, Harvard, and we all are concerned about anti-Semitism, rising anti-Semitism. It's a problem. But of course, Trump just wants to use it as a cudgel to go after institutions that he doesn't like. And by the way, a former Justice Department lawyer said that administration leaders ignored the findings that the elite schools, including Brown and Columbia, had not broken the law when they were pressed into making these deals, paying all this money.
They caved. They could have just stuck to it, and they would have come out winners.
All right. What? Come on, Kathy. What do you think about the departure of Caroline Leavitt from?
I guess being left on the plane.
What do you have to say about that?
I think that her being left on the plane while he was whisked away to safety was a lot for her, and she decided that he wasn't on her side and he wasn't going to stand up for her, and she bailed. And I don't like Caroline Leavitt, never liked a word she said, but I am proud of her. I am proud of her for resigning.
Here's the thing. She on day one of the administration, she said that the Biden administration had been preparing to spend $50 million on condoms in Gaza. I mean, for which she provided no evidence. I mean, she just, lied about everything.
They all think they're going to be special, and they all think that they're going to be the one that he doesn't turn on. And they do whatever he says. They jump through all kinds of circus hoops for him, and he throws them all away. Women, I mean.
It's nice to see ABC suing the FCC for going after their affiliate broadcast licenses.
I filled out a survey for them because I have we all have Channel 7 WABC here in New York. And that was one of the channels that they were trying to eliminate.
Well, they're fighting back, but ABC, of course, in their case, cited something called the First Amendment.
Remember that?
But as soon as this happened, FCC under this, car guy who runs it, they're now going after The View and all the other shows that they've done.
Well, Whoopi Goldberg said so. She knew they were going to come for her. Come on. But as a side note, I don't know if you've watched Jimmy Kimmel this week, but Rosie is on fire. On fire.
We are going to link to Rosie's opening monologue in our email. Gosh. And if you want to get our email, go to gayusatv.org. And sign up for a weekly email. We only send you one, and we will link to that and many other things, including a lot of the people that we're going to talk about who passed away later, because we want to give you more in-depth profiles of them. Now, another Trump loss this week. Not even the hate state of Tennessee can sustain a store selling nothing but Trump merchandise. This place is folding. It's outside of Knoxville. They're selling off the remaining inventory at half off. They're going to close for a lack of shoppers. They had a very good day after Charlie Kirk was shot and killed.
Imagine calling that a very good day.
Mm-mm. And the day after Trump launched the war in Iran, which doesn't seem to be working out, does it?
No, it doesn't. And then they labeled their outhouse the Democrat Superstore. That's gross. I also read in that article that a young reporter tried to say he was retiring, the guy who owns the store. But he set the record straight and said, I'm not retiring. The stuff's not selling. I have to close the store, which I appreciated, since we know that he must be a Trump supporter to have that store. But to admit that the stuff's not selling, that was great for me. That was really great.
Sic semper tyrannis. All right. So then there's the guy who will replace Trump if he happens to pass away before the end of his term. Vice President J.D. Vance just suggested the Trump administration has not gone far enough in limiting access to gender affirming care. This from a guy who wears, you know,
eyeliner.
Okay. Now, I'm not against wearing eyeliner, but own up to it and say celebrate it the way drag queens do and many other people.
But the thing that disturbs me about this is the way he's going about it to urge the Justice Department, which is no longer giving justice, to investigate allegations that medical institutions improperly billed insurers. How would that work exactly for gender-affirming care provided to trans patients? So the way I read that is he's trying to suggest that if you're not trans, you may have paid for care for a trans person. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Am I reading that right?
Yeah. You know, he really wants to go after all the records and at the hospitals and all those kinds of things.
I mean, that just doesn't happen. Whatever. JD, do you, do you. We'll do us. All right. Well, and the things that people had to say about that were kind of interesting. The Human Rights Campaign, you know, accusing HHS of assembling a panel of anti-transgender activists and relying on their anti-transgender resources to explain this thing wrong. The HRC President Kelly Robinson said something similar. You can't handpick a panel of anti-transgender activists and feed the research that they've discovered into the cause and suggest that that's valid. Like, I love that. I love the comments. People have to keep listening to the reality.
Because the care, the trans care, is still supported by the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Yeah.
And they criticize Vance as another attempt to interfere in medical practice and oppose an ideological agenda.
Exactly. And I'm sorry, insurance companies are not billing you for trans care if you are not the trans person receiving the care. They're not.
All right. And there's more on how Trump stripped trans kids of federal health coverage in Medicaid and CHIP, and then told voters to remember this in the November midterms. The rule was signed off on August 11th, and it takes effect on October 13th. Around 130,000 young trans people on Medicaid or CHIP live in states that have not already banned the care. Their coverage now depends on whether the state is going to pay the bill. And, you know, with all these cuts in Medicare and Medicaid coverage and all these other kinds of things, you know, the states are being asked, can you make it up? And like, even New York is like saying, oh, you know, I don't know. I don't think we have all that kind of money. Because think of all the people who are being thrown off the Affordable Care Act. In New York, it's like 450,000.
Yeah.
And
I'll say this.
It's not going to make it up.
I'll say this. I do hope people remember it in November. That's one thing he said that I agree with. Remember this in November.
Well, I mean, losing your medical care, I mean, what could make you more insecure than that? Well, I, of course, many things, but I mean, that is a big one. Obviously, not being able to buy food and not being able to buy gasoline and all those kinds of things make you feel insecure. And that's what people are feeling these days.
Yeah.
And that's why his ratings are in the toilet.
I drove to Maine in the last couple of days to spend some time with family. On the highway, the gas was $4.15 a gallon. $4.15.
Where was this?
In the North Corridor, driving up to Maine on 95 on the highway. $4.15. Crazy.
But the fight's not over. So they've released this final rule banning Medicaid and the Children's Health Insurance Program from covering it. But the Trevor Project says it's not going to change overnight. It's being called a final rule, but we do have time to fight back. We are doing a legal challenge. Now, the finalized rule does not ban care nationally, nor does it advance Trump's efforts to ban hospitals from providing these services if they receive Medicaid funds in other areas of practice. It doesn't change the fact that there is still no federal law restricting gender-affirming care, and many states explicitly protect such care.
Well, let's hope that continues.
Okay. All right. Let's go. One of the biggest stories of the week was Julia Curley. She was out trans intelligence officer, and she served many presidents, and she continued to serve. There she is. She was assigned to be the person who briefed Vice President Pence at the, you know, in the White House. And she wrote a very harrowing article in the Atlantic magazine, to which we will link, and we're going to link to an interview with her. But these two, despite, and he knew she was trans, she knew he was anti-trans, they got along. They in other respects, they respected each other.
So she worked in the first Trump White House, she worked in the Biden White House, and in the second Trump White House, fired.
Right. Let's run a little piece of an interview that she did.
The institutions that I served through my adult life are under assault. The ability of officers to speak truth to power, to inform policymaking so that they make the best decisions on behalf of the United States, that is being eviscerated. And the officers who deliver that, who spend their lives learning about foreign countries, learning how to systematically understand multiple sources of intelligence, convey uncertainty, all of that is being destroyed by an administration that wants to both cherry pick the intelligence to only receive what they want to hear and to punish the officers who have the courage to speak that truth to them, to do their jobs and to live up to the values that we inculcate in all of our officers. And so the only way to do that was to leave and to begin to tell my story. I also felt like I needed to tell the other part of my story, which has nothing to do with my substantive experience in the world, and that's being a trans person. And I know that the sustained assault on people like me is a part of a broader campaign to try to define who gets to be in public spaces, who gets to have positions of honor.
Wow. She is courageous. Yeah. Obviously very competent. Even when everybody was leaving in the second Trump administration because they didn't even want to be there, and she knew she was going to be fired once Trump, in his inauguration address, said there's only two genders and we're getting rid of the, there's no such thing as transgender. She was willing to stay on. And in fact, she had to be called back because of her competence to help transition, because people otherwise they couldn't get through it. Now think about this, what it's doing to national security.
Of course. Well, there's a lot of things doing a lot of things to national security. But yes, this is a big deal. It's a very big deal. I mean, is there any national security? That's my question. I don't really know. But yeah. And I don't know, though. Is she currently working or she's not now?
Well, she's certainly not working at the. Oh, well, I don't think she's not working.
I don't think she's in her position any longer. And that's why she was able to do that interview.
I'll tell you what. Get news clips. Get all the Democrats being attacked on trans issues should run clips of her against their opponents and say, this is what your anti-trans bigotry is doing. Be out there about it.
I mean, just think about all of those people who've given their life to service for this country, and because they're trans, they're now being eliminated without cause, without due process. They're not even in the room when these trials are going on. I'll call them trials. It's really just procedures.
Well, Hegg Seth doesn't even really want women in the military when it comes right down to it, and he won't advance them.
By the way, his flag tattoo is backwards, just saying.
Sorry?
His flag tattoo is backwards.
Well, everything about him is backwards. Yeah. Oh, Pete Hegseth, feeling out a run for president now.
Oh, my God. Now, that's a sure win for the Democrats, I hope.
I don't know. We elected somebody named Donald Trump twice.
Don't say it, Andy. Don't even put it out in the ether. Not put it out in the ether.
The people who want an extremist are going to want an extremist, and he is quite the monster.
We need to come up with a really strong candidate.
Well, I mean,
I have my theories, but
most of the people who, you know, are running are not even saying they're running at this point. But how about that John Ossoff really taking Trump on, the guy who's running for re-election for Senate from Georgia? And he just calls Trump a fool.
What did Rosie call him? The mango Mussolini? I love it.
All very good. All right.
All very good.
I have a correction from last week. Lieutenant Governor Flanagan of Minnesota, if elected to the U.S. Senate, will not be the first Native American senator. She'd be the first Native woman U.S. senator. I got this from a viewer. Thank you for checking in. I should have remembered Ben Nighthorse Campbell of Colorado, who was sort of the futterman of his day, because he was often dissenting. And of course, Vice President Charles Curtis, back, you know, in early part of the century, who represented Kansas, and of course was later president of the Senate. By the way, when Kamala Harris was elected vice president, she was not the first person of color to be vice president. Charles Curtis was.
Charles Curtis, yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk about Wisconsin and this. You want to dive into this?
Go ahead. Let's see the picture. Right.
This case has been going on for a while. Yeah. A former school administrator. This is the guy, Jeffrey Peterson, there at the Raymond School Board. He was voted Principal of the Year. And he says that the school board, because he was gay, fabricated stories about him grooming students before refusing to renew his contract. They spread a lot of lies. The plot involved Moms for Liberty affiliated school boards who won close elections in 2022, and a network of anti-LGBTQ activists. The new school board hired a superintendent who made veiled statements about that his sexual orientation was a problem. Now, this is Wisconsin. The first state in America, in the United States, to ban discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. The first.
Yeah, but you know, this disturbs me for a couple of reasons.
In the early 80s.
It disturbs me for that reason, but it also disturbs me because it seems that we're getting an influx of make up a story if we can't get rid of the person. That really, really just, there's no honor left. It really disturbs me. And speaking of honor, the next story just talks about honor all over the place.
Go right ahead.
Kristen Sinema having an affair with her married male bodyguard while as a senator, even having a tryst at Jessica Dean's wedding. Kristen,
Jessica was a CNN anchor. Now, why is this all coming up? Because the bodyguard's ex-wife, Heather, has brought a suit for alienation of affection against her. And so she admitted to more hookups and doing it on a fundraising trip. During the trial, one of the lawyers said, "You understand, Ms. Sinema, don't you, that a wife reading your text, putting my hand on your heart, I'll see you soon, I miss you, might be concerned about who is sending her husband that kind of message," referring to putting her hand on her
heart. Oh, heck yeah. You know what? I'm really proud of the wife.
Huh?
I'm really proud of the wife for putting her out there, putting her on the stand, and making her accountable.
Right.
As a wife for over 30 years, I would just want to rip her apart.
When Kristen Sinema came in, we were excited and out. Bisexual senator, and she was one of the biggest traitors to the Democratic Party. Yeah. She held up a lot of bills. You know, she and Manchin from West Virginia.
They
really screwed things up for the Democrats.
And then we find out she's not honorable in any way. So she's gone, and hopefully the wife will get what's coming.
She'll be on the Republican ticket next year. She can run for vice president.
She gets right in with them, right?
Pete Hegseth.
All right, let's talk about some really horrible news, Andy. The fun news is over.
Right.
Colorado.
Yeah, what happened?
This gay couple in Denver was the victim of a road rage incident. And this road rage incident really disturbs me for a few reasons. First of all, of course, both sides have a different story, but I'm inclined to believe this couple. One was shot in the head, is in critical condition. Later on, so here's how it went, according to them. They were driving home, and an e-bike was following them and getting in the way of their whatever. And I'm guessing they must have saw a rainbow flag or something on the car, and they started with the gay slurs.
And then the e-bike cut them off.
That's right. The e-bike cut them off, so they drove past their apartment complex, so they didn't lead the e-bike to where they lived, which was smart. But when they turned around to come back, they were waiting there. That's suspect to me. How did they know that they would come back to that spot? I don't know the answer to that. But they more calling of names and whatever, and one of the e-bike guys shot through the back windshield. I mean, unbelievable. Then he was standing there when the cops were investigating the incident. He was just standing around.
He lied about it.
Very very bizarre guy.
But this guy's name is Jacob. Let me get the name right.
Cifuentes.
This all happened back on August 1st. He actually confirmed there was another rider. There was two e-bikes. The other rider confirmed the account of the couple. And after learning about the shooting victim's condition from detectives, he said in an interview that he deserved the consequences.
He meaning the guy who was shot.
Well, it's a little unclear. I mean,
a little unclear, but I'm guessing from the hatred that's what he meant, that the guy deserved to be shot.
Right.
And he's been arrested. Hopefully he'll be prosecuted and he'll face what he has coming to him. Horrible story.
Okay. And you, of course, are very active with Gays Against Guns.
I am. And I'm very disturbed by anyone with a gun.
Yes.
Especially this guy.
Well, let's talk about some of the people that we lost this week. Frank Perez, he was a writer, educator, and archivist whose work preserved generations of LGBTQ history in New Orleans and across Louisiana. He died at the age of 57, a sudden battle with cancer, apparently. He grew up in he was involved in campus ministry when he was a kid, and he was forced to attend conversion therapy camp in Kansas. And he befriended a young gay man there who was abandoned by his family. And this guy he met in conversion therapy camp sparked his lifelong appreciation of the films of Betty Davis. That's gay. Okay.
That's really gay. And conversion did nothing to help them.
But he moved to New Orleans following Katrina, the Hurricane Katrina. He co-founded LGBTQ Archives Project of Louisiana back in 2014, authored more than six books, including Exile, the history and lore surrounding New Orleans gay culture and its oldest gay bar. He led gay history tours. He was selected as Southern Decadence Grand Marshal in 2018 and a New Orleans Pride Grand Marshal, so a tremendous loss for the New Orleans community and for the community nationwide.
Speaking of tremendous losses, Elizabeth Smith from legendary voice coach at Juilliard died at 91. But they say the cause was heart failure, and her partner, Gene Churchill, a professor emerita of dance at Bard College, is at a loss, obviously. They were together for over 20 years. They met teaching at Bard. Ms. Smith had a wonderful reputation as a tough voice coach. She taught people like Laura Linney. She taught a bunch of folks.
Kevin Kline, Patti LuPone, Wendell Pierce. Fine.
Thank you. I got stuck. Andy loved Patti LuPone, Wendell Pierce. Laura Linney said of her, she was a very tough coach, but she always felt that She was on her side. Wonderful person. Amazing career.
I mean, one of the things that struck me was, you know, she was there at the beginning of the drama department there at Juilliard, which only started in 1968. Mm-hmm. And she had a particular expertise with Shakespeare. And when she coached it, the actors ended up knowing what they were saying. And that was her, you know, because a lot of people, they just mouth the words. They're pretty complex. Some of them are arcane. Anyway, she did that. She met her partner 23 years ago when they were both teaching at Bard. Her survivors, her partner said, are all the actors she taught. Okay, now let's move on to some Black pastors that we lost.
Two of them. No, go ahead. I just said there's two of them. That was really hard to take.
Yes. One of them was Bishop Rainey Cheeks, the founder and senior pastor of DC's LGBTQ supportive Inner Light Ministries church there. I'm going to turn that phone off. Sorry.
Between the two of us, we got a lot of background phones and stuff. I apologize to our viewers for that.
Sorry. Anyway, so more about him. He ran the Inner Light Ministries Church and founded Us Helping Us, People Into Living, which provides services for DC area residents with HIV, with an outreach to the Black LGBTQ community. He has died at 74. He was so honored in his time for all the groundbreaking work that he did there. Especially with the Black LGBTQ community. He founded this supportive church in 1993 and was its senior pastor. It was, I got to have a celebration of his life.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Go ahead.
A celebration of life for him is scheduled to take place 11 a.m. Saturday, August 29th at DC's First Congressional Church, 945 G Street Northwest. If you're in DC, you want to go
That's
to that.
The Congregational Church, not the Congressional Church.
Did I say Congressional? I got Congress on the brain, Andy. Congress on the brain.
We hardly have a Congress anymore. By the way, earlier in his life, he played a major role in opening the 1975. The Clubhouse nightclub that operated until its closing in 1990, a mostly Black LGBTQ social club. So it wasn't just church. All right. And then Reverend Derek Terry, who was a Cincinnati pastor known across the country for his LGBTQ activism. He's died at the age of 42.
So young.
Well, he came out to his congregation back in 2015, and more than a million TV viewers on the Oprah Winfrey Network show called Iyanla Fix My Life, which I'm not familiar with. But anyway, he appeared on the show a couple of times, and he wrote a book called God Loves Me, and So Do I. He was also executive director of the Open and Affirming Coalition of the United Church of Christ. Now, the United Church of Christ is one of the most supportive Christian denominations that there is. So they're going to have a memorial service. Well, for those of you watching today, it's going to be held August 20th at 1 o'clock at the First Church, United Church of Christ in College Hill there. And they're going to have another service on the 22nd in his native city of Louisville, Kentucky. And again, we shall link to his obituary.
A short but amazing life.
All right. Let's get into some international news here. Let's go to Bolivia.
Oh, come on. I love this story. As you know, marriage is my thing. I'm a little confused.
Oh, wait a minute. Before you say marriage is your thing, you were one of the leaders of the Marriage Equality New York and USA.
In USA. Yes, Andy. Thank you so much.
The grassroots groups that got us advanced the cause of equal marriage rights.
The grassroots groups that they all forget about. Yes, that was us.
We don't forget about them here at Gay USA.
Thank you so much.
We were there before any of the big groups were.
Yes, we were. Thank you so much for that, Andy. And that's why this story both makes me happy and confused at the same time.
All right, let's see if we can clear it up for our viewers.
So after a 4-year legal battle, Fabiana Banzer and Scarlett Roca became the first same-sex couple to be civilly married in Bolivia. But here's the catch. They won their case, but marriage equality is not legal yet in Bolivia.
It's forbidden by the Constitution.
Yes, it's forget, but they won, and I'm confused as to why they won, and I couldn't really find a clear reason, but I'm glad they won. And it does open the door to similar challenges and a path toward marriage equality in Bolivia. But I am not clear why they were able to win their case, I have to admit. It says in the story that the court issued 2 constitutional injunctions, an extraordinary judicial remedy used to protect citizens against actions that violate basic constitutional rights, is why they were able to marry. However, it's still against the Constitution to have marriage equality. So hopefully people will take this case and this decision and move marriage equality forward in Bolivia. That's my hope.
Well, it reminds me of some of the stuff that's gone on in Japan, where courts keep saying your rights are being violated, but anybody who wants these rights has to come like individually to get another decision from us. Even in the United States of America, eventually they made a blanket decision for the whole country and said first that your federal rights cannot be denied. That was Edie Windsor's case. And secondly, that states need to recognize it as well.
Right. That's what happens here. But I think the setup worked that way for us because we have states and there were enough states that were passing marriage equality to make it possible for a federal case to win. In these countries, however, it doesn't work that way. It's one government for the entire, it's not broken down that way. So
we went through this in Mexico as well, state by state. Yeah. Now they're actually the second same-sex couple to win legal recognition because in 2020, there was a male couple that won their court battle to become the first same-sex couple to register.
As a civil union, different. Yes,
not
married.
Well, come on, Bolivia, get with the program.
Yeah, get with the program. Do I have to go down there and give some speeches? I'll do it.
All right. Here's a brief report, disturbing, in London. You know, 2 guys are walking along the street in a neighborhood that I often walk through. You can see the film right here. And these guys steal fruit from the fruit stand and start throwing it at them and saying anti-gay slurs. This was in Gospel Oak in Camden. And Camden is where, as I say, where I stay in London. I never worry about walking around. And Camden is, you know, a lot of gay people. It went to court, but while they were found guilty, they were hardly penalized. It's almost like a suspended sentence. But one of the guys who was attacked said that, now whenever I go somewhere, I find myself thinking about how are we going to get home? Which route do we take? Where is it safe? You know, when something like that happens to you, you lose your sense of safety.
Yes, you do. It happened to me one time at a walk-a-thon. I was walking down the street with my girlfriend holding hands, and the guy threw a bottle at us. But me being who I am, I had him arrested, and I showed up in court and gave my statement, and he served 2 years, and that's how that's supposed to go.
Well, I was only assaulted by Morton Downey Jr. in a taping of his television show.
It's really
a story I like to forget, but he slapped me across the face, so I sued him. I got $4,000 out of it. But, I mean, and the show never aired. It was just, I mean, I never should have done the show, but it was the first week that it was on, and I didn't know how crazy it was. You look up Morton Downey Jr. In Australia, a jury found a former Catholic bishop of sexually abusing 2 men. This bishop's name was, he's now not a bishop anymore, Christopher Saunders, 76, guilty of 13 sexual offenses and 12 charges of indecent assault. And these young men were Indigenous people, and he used to ply them with alcohol, and that's what he was found guilty of. Over in Canada, go ahead.
in AIDS Health, Canada ended the sperm donor restrictions for gay and bisexual men, a precedent-setting move. I was happy to hear this. They held gay men and bisexual men at bay from donating sperm because they thought it would spread STIs and HIV. Thank goodness people have had some education around those issues and realized that that's just silly.
Yeah, I mean, an interim step they took was to say, well, anybody who has anal sex can't give. I mean, it was really aimed at gays. So they're
I'd love to know how they're going to prove that. Right. I mean, come on. Crazy. I mean,
to reassure everybody, you know, a doctor there says that in infectious diseases, HIV testing methods today are highly sensitive and accurate, such as there is effectively no residual risk associated with the current testing methods. All right.
Science, folks. Science.
Let's talk about Maura Gillison.
Oh, I loved her. I love her reputation and what she was able to do.
Amazing. We'll talk about her then.
Okay, so she linked throat cancers to HPV. Previously, before her research, most throat cancers were connected to smoking. But she was able to prove...
And excessive alcohol consumption.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry, Andy. Right. And excessive alcohol. But she was able to prove through her research that there was more to it than that, and that oral sex could play a part in throat cancers, and HPV can play a part in throat cancers. So that was very interesting to me.
She died at the age of 61. Now we have little girls getting inoculated for HPV. They're not as much doing it for boys. And
no,
boys
and they
are at risk as well.
Yeah. Well, and they don't want me to be gay either. So that's
that. Well, anyway, the FDA has expanded approval of the vaccine for the prevention of these kinds of head and neck cancers. Yet cases are still rising for reasons that include a latency period of 20 years or more. This is why you got to get them young to do it. By the way, the person that Trump just installed at the FDA, a total quack.
Total. Get your vaccines, people, including HPV. Get your vaccines. All right, Andy, it's time for some entertainment news in our last 8 minutes.
We're actually down to 4 minutes.
Oh, 4 minutes. That's right.
Is it 4 minutes? No.
Six. We're both wrong. It's six.
No, it's 5 minutes and 19 seconds.
And we've talked about this for so long that it's not 5 minutes. Talk about Lily.
All right. Now, Kathy, so everybody remembers the Wachowski brothers who did the Matrix films. Well, one of them became Lily Wachowski, transgender. And she says she can't get Hollywood to fund her new all-trans movie. Talk about that.
Both of them are trans, Lana and Lily. Both of them. There she is, Lily Wachowski.
The movie is called The Hunted. It's in late stage, but Hollywood executives are declining to fund the $10 million project, which isn't a lot of money in Hollywood. She says people like it, but they really don't want to make it because it has a wall-to-wall trans cast. You know, that happens so much in movies about gay people. They had to star non-gay people playing.
Non-gay people, yep.
They still do a lot of that. With trans people, I think they've made the point you're not having trans characters portrayed by non-trans people anymore. I think that point has been made. I don't think it's been made so much. And of course, you know, actors say anybody should be able to play anything. And to some extent, that's true. But the people who really have the sensitivity for the role. Anyway.
Well, these times when trans people are so under attack, we can't afford to have non-trans people taking these roles. We have to support our trans siblings. I feel she's going to get the money. And I feel that the film is going to be completed and released.
Well, it's she created the movie with her romantic partner, Mickey Ray Mahoney. And here's the description. It's a dystopian political thriller set in a version of the United States where trans people have been pushed to the margins of society and are brutalized. That's not so fantastic. It's happening already.
It is. And
when two trans women seek to solve a crime, they find themselves embroiled in a scheme that goes all the way to the top of the government. Well, this is
a little too real. Maybe that's why she's not getting the money.
This is not fantasy.
No, it's not.
This country.
Yeah, I believe she's going to get it though, and I believe that the film will be released.
Oh, you're going to fund it?
No, but I think she'll. You know, there are organizations that'll go out on a limb for her. I think she's a very talented person. She's done really amazing work in the past, and I think that her reputation will help.
I hope that producers who are watching Gay USA, as you regularly do, will think about her, but also think about Gay USA. We hope you will keep supporting Gay USA, and we see that many of you are, even though we all miss Anne. All right,
but we did.
You can go to our website at gayusatv.org. And by the way, Anne is still volunteering to receive the checks that come in and process them for Fractured Atlas, which is for Gay USA.
That's nice.
Yes. And you, of course, can donate online directly. All right. There's something called the Society of LGBTQ Entertainment Critics, GALACA, and they've announced the winners of the 18th Dorian TV Awards. And, of course, leading the pack are Heated Rivalry and Hacks. Now, we're going to link to the whole list of people that won the awards there. Also, in terms of acting, Francois Arnaud took the Best Supporting TV Performance for his role in Heated Rivalry. And lots of credit, of course, to Jacob Tierney, who was named this year's GALACA LGBTQIA+ TV Trailblazer.
I never even knew this organization existed, so that's amazing. That's really great.
They're a great group. I'm not a member, I should be. I'll have to write them. And Hacks won Best TV Comedy and Best Written TV Show for its fifth and final season. Gene Smart took Best TV Performance. Okay. And Hannah Embinder, who's out lesbian, picked up the group's Wild Wit Award, WILDE, like Oscar Wilde.
Love Jean Smart. She's a great ally for us, too. Maybe they'll give Lily the money. To finish a movie. Who knows?
30 seconds. What's on your mind?
I am. What is on my mind? You know, the same thing that's on everybody's mind every day. How long is this nonsense going to go on?
More than two more years.
Oh, gosh. And how are we going to get through the midterms? That's what's on my mind, Andy, the midterms. This is our one chance to pull this thing back.
Thanks, Kathy. We're done, and we'll see you next week. Thanks, Kathy.